From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Norris.
And I'm Robert Siegel. Bob Hope was born British, but his unrivaled career in show business spanned a century of American entertainment, from vaudeville and Broadway through radio, the rise of the movie musical, and the advent of television. His death last night at his home near Los Angeles came just 2 months after his 100th birthday.
Whatever he did, Hope was always a comedian. His folksy brand of humor played a key role in the evolution of the quintessential American style of stand-up comedy, and it was based on his rapid-fire delivery of one-liners.
But the best thing in the new cars is a special horn. When you pass a brunette, it plays good, good, good. When you pass a blonde, it plays that's for me. And when you pass a redhead, it stops and you play.
Hey, Lumplap, you've got two chins. Would you like to try for one?
Why did you expose yourself to such danger to rescue me?
Oh, I don't know. I guess I was so excited I forgot I was a coward.
I'm naturally interested in baseball. My brother was quite a ball player. He played in the Coast League up the ocean here a ways. More of an off-the-coast league. At Alcatraz. He was quite a pitcher. He had plenty on the ball, but the chain held him back.
Bob, you don't seem to be talking plainly this evening. What's wrong,
sir? Well, I just came from the dentist. I was having my teeth fixed.
What's that got to do with your not talking plainly?
Well, I only had a dollar in my pocket, so the dentist gave me buck teeth.
This morning, my son Tony asked me why we observe Father's Day. I said, don't you know who brings home the bacon around here? He said, no, Pop, but we sure know who lays the eggs.
Joining us to talk about Bob Hope is Larry Gelbart, who, among other things, wrote for Bob Hope. He speaks to us from a movie lot. Mr. Gelbart, thank you very much for speaking with us today.
Thank you for asking me.
You were one of his joke writers. Tell us how he worked with his writers. How much did he participate in that process?
He participated as the ultimate editor of what went into the script and what didn't. It wasn't just a matter of jokes either, or just jokes per se. I mean, there were just one-liners which went into the monologues. And then there were jokes that would be part of an exchange with a guest star, say, or one of the regulars on the show. There would be the creation of new lines to go into a movie script, very often to the surprise of the other player in the movie scene, including the director sometimes.
When you were writing jokes for him, it seems like you were writing for his voice. In his movies, he essentially played himself. But
yes.
And the character was created by the writing team, but you really were writing for him. There really wasn't a separation.
Yeah, we were, you know, it was very bespoke material, tailor-made for Bob, his rhythms, his attitudes. We wrote stuff which we knew would fit into his mouth, would fit into his persona, and would be easily identifiable as a Hope joke.
What is a quintessential Bob Hope joke?
A quintessential Bob Hope joke is, here I am in Washington, I like to come here every once in a while just to visit my money. You know, it's short, it tells a whole little story. The listener identifies with the fact that he pays taxes, too, and it just works.
Bob Hope is also known for his association with war, World War II, which gave him quite a bit of relevance, and also the Vietnam War, which he supported in his material.
You forgot Korea.
And Korea, of
yes.
course. How did war change his comedy?
It didn't change his comedy so much as, you know, I mean, a vaudevillian talks about being in a one-horse town and how bad the food is and how small the hotel room was. He just transferred that into a military context and talked about how uncomfortable a tent was and how awful a particular location was. So he was essentially camouflaging the comedian's standard wares as military material, you know? And the main thing was not so much the material, but that he was there, that he showed up. Soldiers and sailors and Marines and pilots and nurses and God knows what else. In the most obscure, remote, forgotten places. And there was somebody from home.
He also pioneered the format of the monologue, and we still see that every night on television from people
yep.
like David Letterman and Jay Leno. Why did it work so well for him?
Well, it was that talent was evolved in vaudeville. He began as a hoofer, dancer, with some patter and songs, and eventually got right down to just doing material at a mic or without a mic in vaudeville, right out front to the people. And Bob just, you know, mastered it to perfection.
He did vaudeville, he did Broadway, television, radio, he was in several films. Where was he most comfortable?
I think he was always comfortable, wherever he was, because he was always prepared, physically, professionally. I think he enjoyed doing well. He enjoyed doing monologues more than anything because that was in his DNA. But Bob really was at home every place. He knew almost everybody on the planet, or was meeting them all the time. So whether it was a cup of coffee or a command performance, he was just at the top of his game.
Mr. Gelbart, thank you so much for speaking with us and sharing your memories.
Thank you.
Larry Gelbart talking to us about Bob Hope, who died last night at the age of 100.
A new sign was installed today at the exhibit on Bob Hope at the Library of Congress in Washington, D.C. The sign included a new piece of information under Hope's photograph, the date of his death. NPR's Lynn Neary went to talk to the people who visited the exhibit today.
Mary Spildy of Vancouver heaved a sigh as she stood watching old films of early vaudeville acts. "I grew up with Bob Hope," she said. "I knew he had to pass on, but it was comforting just knowing he was still here." Her earliest memories of Hope were from the radio.
"I remember my grandma would pop corn and make fudge, and we'd sit and listen to Bob Hope and some of the other people on the radio. It was great."
Monica Brown of Omaha, Nebraska said she always thought of Hope as an entertainer from her parents' generation. Even so, she wanted her kids to see the exhibit today.
"They all want to go eat lunch. I said, no, we've got to see the Bob Hope thing before we go. Especially when I learned that he had just died, I thought, this is the day when we're here and maybe they would remember it even better."
Brown says what she remembers best about Bob Hope is his USO shows for American troops, and that's what she wants her kids to know about.
"That he took time to pay tribute to the American soldier, and that to me is what he stood for, was, you know, that he honored our troops overseas enough that he would take his time to go there, and that's how I remember him."
Those USO shows weren't without controversy during the Vietnam era, and for many baby boomers, Bob Hope stood as a symbol for the other side in the generation war that erupted during that time. Jim Unger of Shreveport, Louisiana came of age then, but he says he was always fond of the comedian.
"Bob Hope was Bob Hope, and no matter what your politics, I think if you enjoyed Bob Hope and his silly movies and his shows on TV, you liked Bob Hope no matter what his politics were."
Standing with his father and brother, 15-year-old Thaddeus Mostout laughed as he watched an old Bob Hope skit. He says he sometimes catches old Bob Hope movies on early morning TV.
"I think he's hilarious."
"You do?"
"Yeah."
"Do you think many kids your age know who he is?"
"No. No, not at all."
"It is the end of an era," said Thaddeus's dad, Daryl Mostout. But he went on, "Bob Hope will live forever in his work."
"We have his treasure of his comedy for generations to come. I'm sure 50, 100 years from now, we'll all still be watching Bob Hope movies and enjoying his comedy."
Visitors to the exhibit on Bob Hope at the Library of Congress, remembering the comedian who died yesterday. Lynn Neary, NPR News, Washington.
You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.